Well, I want to quickly get in my lesson, but before I do, I want to wish all the fathers out there a happy Father's Day, and thank you for being that spiritual guide and leader in your family and in your kids' lives. We are going to talk about not just fatherhood, but we're going to get back into our series about parenting this morning. We're going to talk about that wonderful dynamic, that wonderful relationship that God put together called the family. I really believe that family can be a kind of taste of heaven on earth when it is done in God's way, in God's will. And so, in lesson number three, we're going to talk about putting our kids in their proper setting. Now, I didn't put that as some parents do, putting them in their proper place. But we're going to talk about the roles that our child plays or our children play in the family. You might remember last time we talked about that our goal is to raise up happy and healthy and successful children. And that is still our goal in this series of to remind ourselves how we can do that from God's Word. Well, remember we talked about how Zig Ziglar, a very popular back in the day motivational speaker, gave a little questionnaire to his audience about what is it that makes people successful. And what we saw in that is that people recognized, at least in his audience, that it is not some special skill that you learn or some special talent that you have that makes you successful, but it is things like honesty, a positive attitude, faith, love, and commitment. And we looked at that and we said that these are things that are what? Attitudes. These are things that are characteristic of people. And so it is not some special skill, some special talent. But people recognize what makes you successful are having successful attitudes. We also notice that some of the very things that they mentioned are the very things that Solomon in the book of Proverbs talks about, not only as being wise, but the secret to success. The secret to being wise in the eyes of God. And so it is no surprise to us that people recognize that keys to success are the very things that are from God in His wisdom. And so building upon that to grow and to raise happy, healthy, and successful kids in the eyes of God, we want to talk about putting things in their proper setting. And so we have a diamond ring here. I had to ask Tamara if I could borrow the wedding ring and take a picture of it. Not really. But anyway, so here's a wedding ring. Now, how many of you have a diamond ring like this? If you had one like this, and maybe you're lucky enough to have one, would take out the diamond and put it in a setting like this? This is one of those ring pops, right? This isn't a colorful diamond at all. It's a sucker that you suck on until it's all gone. Well, you wouldn't do that, would you? You wouldn't put an expensive, beautiful diamond onto a setting like a blow pop here, like a ring sucker. You wouldn't do that because it's not proper. There's all sorts of things that could go wrong. Well, let me give another example. Look at this beautiful couple in nice formal wear. He's in a tuxedo. She's in a formal gown, maybe even a wedding dress. When's the last time you saw two people dressed like this at McDonald's? People usually don't dress like that in McDonald's. That's not the usual setting, the normal setting. Usually people are much more casual to go to McDonald's. It's a very different setting than formal attire would require. Or what about this? Even to an Angels game. Now, if you saw a couple dressed like this in Angel game, you'd probably think, well, they're getting married at some point, or maybe they got married before the game. But you don't often see people dressed like that to go to an Angels game. because it's just not the proper setting for that formal attire. And maybe even more weird to see a couple like that at a DMV. You see, there's a proper setting for things. And when we talk about children and we talk about the family dynamic, there's a proper setting for all of that, that God has designed to have happy, healthy, and successful families. Let's use a biblical example as well. In Genesis 37, verse 3 and 4, we read about the family of Jacob. His name is changed at this time to Israel. And we read that now Israel loved Joseph more than all of his sons, because he was the son of his old age. And he had made him a very colored tunic. And his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all of his brothers, and so they hated him, and they could not speak to him on friendly terms. Now, Jacob was not the only one that showed favoritism and more love for a particular child, but here we're told that Israel loved Joseph more than all of his other sons. We had a total of 12 sons, we know. Well, Israel placed Joseph in the wrong setting. And as you read on in the story, you see all sorts of harm that comes upon, all sorts of dysfunction, all sorts of terrible things that happen not only to Jacob and to Joseph, but to the entire family. And because he puts Joseph in the improper setting, it sets him up for years and years of pain and suffering and loss. We need to put our kids and set up our family in their proper setting. And I want to establish all this morning by this reality. Something we know is coming. For some of us, it's already happened. The empty nesters out there. But we know that one day our child or children are going to grow up and they're going to move out. And that just recently happened for us with Kyle. And we have to understand that we're not going to always be there to make their decisions, to help them, to tell them to do this or to do that. It is our job as parents to prepare our children for that day. That's part of that goal of raising our children to be happy, healthy, and successful. And so not only is what we instill our children important, like we've talked in our first two lessons about influencing our children, us being the greatest spiritual influence in their lives, and who's teaching our children, and make sure that what our children are getting put into their hearts and into their minds is proper and moral and godly. But we prepare our children by what they learn from the family, by what they learn from the structure environment. What Jacob's sons learned was that their father may have loved them, but not as much as Joseph. And that's not a lesson we want to teach. And so we prepare our children by establishing a proper family structure and environment. So what does God want the family to look like? What is that family structure or dynamic? What does it look like? Well, turn with me, if you would, to Ephesians chapter 5, which is our memory verse for this month, at least part of it. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 22, where Paul writes these words: "Wives, be subject to your own husbands as to the Lord, for the husband is the head of the wife, as Christ also is the head of the church, he himself being the Savior of the body." Let's also go to 1 Corinthians chapter 11, where in regard to the head covering, Paul says pretty much the same thing in chapter 11, verse 3, 1 Corinthians 11, verse 3, but I want you to understand that Christ is the head of every man, and that the man is the head of a woman, and God is the head of Christ. God, you notice, even in His plan, in His kingdom, in His family, has a certain organization, a certain structure. There are roles that people play in His family. And so God has set up the father, the husband, to be the head of the house. That is the godly role that we have been given. And that is not a role, as you read Ephesians chapter 5 very closely, that makes us a ruthless dictator, where we get to do whatever we want and say whatever we want and to command our wife and our children to do whatever we want. That is not the role at all. In fact, a very smart father slash husband is one that will listen to what his wife desires and to seek out her opinion, to make her a value part of the leadership of that family. But ultimately, it comes down to the husband, the father, to make the decisions and to be responsible for those decisions. And when a wife and a husband, for as much as they talk it out and try to see it from each other's standpoint, cannot agree, she needs to be submissive, and he needs to make the best possible choice he believes in his heart of hearts for that family. And so the father, the husband, the man is the head of the house. Go over to Genesis chapter 2 and in verse 18, where God tells us clearly what the role of the woman is in the very reason he created her. In Genesis chapter 2, verse 18, the Lord God said, "It is not good for a man to be alone. I will make him a helper suitable for him." And as God does this, creating the woman, he brings the woman to the man. And the man, in verse 23, is love at first sight. He says to God, clearly, "Wow, what did you do? You got it right. This is now bone of my bones, flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman because she was taken out of man." And so God established a one flesh covenant relationship in one verse of the Bible. Isn't that amazing? And he set up that relationship for them to help one another, to be companions with one another, not to fight and work against one another. And so we have the husband and the wife working together, fulfilling their roles, embracing their God-given roles with love and commitment. And not that the Bible commands us to get married. You don't have to get married to be a faithful Christian. You don't have to have children to be a faithful Christian. But most couples do want to have the joy of raising kids and the memories that you make, and to have those young ones who don't remain very young for long in our lives. And so, how do we look at our children? What is God's way of looking at our children? Well, He wants our children to understand that the husband and wife relationship is the primary relationship. There are experts who are not Christians, they may not even be religious, who make it very clear that the evidence is that kids thrive when they know that mom and dad are in complete love with one another. When they know that that relationship is strong, and they can see that in the family dynamic, then that leads to all sorts of security and well-being and healthiness. Now, there might be someone that's listening to this. There might be someone you know that did not grow up in that way. And children can be affected when a relationship between the husband and wife is not strong or not even in existence anymore. Divorce has an incredible impact on kids. And I can speak from personal experience going through it as a young boy. And so husbands and wives, fathers and mothers need to make sure that the kids see and understand that mom and dad aren't going anywhere. They love each other. They're committed to one another. They need that strength. That doesn't mean that mom and dad can just, you know, forget about the kids and ignore the kids and neglect them and just go off and travel and do whatever they want. No. But there's an order to that. There's a priority. We're going to talk about some dynamics in families in a little bit where this isn't the case and some of the ramifications of it. But if you want to make your children healthy and happy and successful, one of the best things you can do is make your spouse healthy, happy, and successful. To look out for their well-being. You know, there's sometimes where couples struggle, and there's a struggle in their relationship, and they're having marital troubles, and what some couples figure out is, well, let's just have children, and that will fix the problem. Well, that's not going to work. That's just adding fuel to the fire, adding other problems. Adding others to a bad situation. No, what you need to do is fix the marriage. That can be fixed. All things are possible with God. And then with that strong, renewed relationship, you can bring happy, healthy kids into a loving family dynamic. So as we start to introduce kids to the family, we want to introduce them and make them feel welcome members. They are an important part of the family, and that's the key. They are part of the family. They are not, like Joseph might have been led to believe, the most important part of the family. No, they're an important member of this family. They need to realize that they have a role and a function in the family. Now, when they're real little, their function and role is just to look cute and let mom and dad enjoy having this cute little innocent baby. But as they grow older, there's a role that they play in the well-being and in the function of the family. And it needs to come about because you're part of this family. You're going to fulfill your role. You're going to help your family. And it's simply because you're part of this family. We are a team and we work together. They need to have rules. And I'm very clear on this, that when it comes to the Christian household, really any household, the moral rules need to be the same. I really just despise this whole idea where families of the world, where the parents can use adult language, but when the child does so, they get punished for that. The rules need to be the same when it comes to morality and righteousness. Now, when we talk about rules like bedtime and things like that, they're not going to be the same. In fact, one child might be a little bit different because of age or whatever it might be. But the moral rules need to be implemented and taught. Kids need to know right from wrong. And it's not just, hey, this is right because I said so. They need to be explained, why is this right? And really important, not just that something's wrong, but why is it wrong? And that's a wonderful thing of having such a Bible-based godly family. The Bible is definitely going to help you be able to do that. And they also, if they're going to have rules, need to have discipline if they break those rules. Both the Bible and experts say that children thrive on knowing the boundaries. Now, they may not tell you that they want the discipline, they need to be disciplined, they need the rules, but it's very clear. That's part of that that security. That's part of that happy development. The Bible talks about that, and in another lesson we'll look at some of those passages, but for time's sake, we're going to keep moving on. But I really believe that this is what God intends as the family dynamic. That the marriage comes first and then the parent-child relationship. In fact, go back to Ephesians chapter 5, which is really interesting. In Ephesians chapter 5, where Paul decides, I want to talk about these relationships in the lives of Christians. And so he starts that in Ephesians chapter 5 and in verse 1. Therefore be imitators of God as beloved children. Walk in love just as Christ also loved you and gave himself up for us as an offering and a sacrifice to God as a fragrant aroma. What's he talking? He's talking about the individual relationship with God. And I want to tell you that if your relationship with God is not as strong as it can be, if you're not working on that relationship to overcome your weaknesses and to overcome your sin, that's going to directly affect your relationship within the family dynamic as well. That needs to be a key and core relationship, my relationship with God. But because I have that relationship, look at chapter 5, verse 22, the very next relationship he talks about is the marriage relationship. Wives, be subject to your own husbands. Husbands, verse 25, love your wives. Isn't it interesting that when he starts talking about that family, he starts with the marriage? And he goes on down to chapter 6, verse 1, and the very next relationship he talks about, children, obey your parents in the Lord. For what? For this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise, so that it may be well with you and that you may live long on the earth. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. And then the very next relationship, slaves, be obedient to those who are your masters. Verse 9, masters, do the same thing to them and give up threatening, knowing that both their master and yours is in heaven, and there is no partiality with him. Isn't it interesting that as Paul decides, I'm going to talk about these commands and these exhortations of these various relationships that Christians have, he talks about them in the same order that God created them. And so there has to be this balance in this relationship, but sometimes there's things that happen where these relationships may come head to head. And sometimes because of the marriage, the parent-child relationship has to be put on hold to work out this with the marriage. Sometimes a father has to leave work because the child needs him. And when those situations happen, it has to become the priority. Most of the time we're able to balance all of that. But this helps us to know what is important to keep that family functioning and healthy. So let's finish off our lesson this morning by some temptations, very hard temptations, very common traps that families fall into that are not healthy, things that hinder a family's health. The first one is referred to as what we call the conflict-avoidant family. Let's go over to 1 Samuel, if you would, chapter 3. And I don't know, I can't say dogmatically that Eli was a conflict-avoidant parent. I mean, he does talk to his sons about their sins as priest, but obviously not strong enough in the eyes of God. And so in 1 Samuel 3:11, the Lord said to Samuel, "Behold, I'm about to do a thing in Israel at which both ears of everyone who hears it will tingle. In that day I will carry out against Eli all that I have spoken concerning his house from beginning to end. For I have told him that I am about to judge his house forever for the iniquity which he knew because of his sons brought a curse on themselves, and he did not rebuke them. Going back a little bit in chapter 2 and in verse 12, we learn that the sons of Eli were worthless men who did not know the Lord. And yet, they served as priests. They did not know the Lord, but they were the priest. And so God says, listen, Eli, I'm going to carry out what I said to you because you didn't deal with your sons the way you should have. There are a family dynamic where none of us like conflict. But sometimes, as a mature adult, you've got to do things that aren't easy but become necessary. But there are some people that just try to avoid conflict. In fact, in family, they try to avoid conflict any way they can. And so problems are laughed about or ignored or swept under the carpet, thinking that, what? The most important thing is that everyone's always happy. And conflict doesn't make us happy, and so we're going to avoid the conflict. Well, the problem with that is, number one, you don't get to avoid conflict. It just kind of builds up and it festers and it until it explodes. And that's eventually what it does. And then nobody's happy in the family. But I want you to think about this as well. You teach your kids that the way that you be happy is to avoid conflict. And that's the way they learn all their lives. And then they go out on their own and they're out in the world and they're trying to get a job, they're trying to work and trying to support themselves. You think they're not going to have conflict? Of course they're going to have conflict and troubles and problems. But now they don't know how to deal with it. And so they, what? They blame other people. They become the victim. They don't know how to function in that. Let me give you an example. This is a true story. There was a family that bought their little boy a blue toothbrush. Problem is, he wanted a red toothbrush. And so he started screaming and crying, I want a red toothbrush. I don't want a blue one. Well, guess what they did? They ran out and got him a red toothbrush, which made him happy about 2 days. Then he wanted a green toothbrush. And to avoid the conflict, they got him a green toothbrush. In fact, Mom got so wise, she just went out and bought all the colors. And so you went into the little boy's bathroom, and here's this cup holding a rainbow of toothbrush colors. I think we can see clearly where that would lead to and how that would hinder a child from being healthy and successful. And eventually, that's not the type of happiness that we want. God's system deals with conflict. Maybe it's dad as the head of the house that's going to deal with it. Maybe it's mom taking on that role in this particular case. But it's done with what? Love and compassion and understanding. Let's talk about another temptation that sometimes comes into a family dynamic, and that is the mother-centered family. How many of you ever watched that show, Everybody Loves Raymond, right? If you watch that show, and you know the mom, Ray and Robert's mom, that's the mother-centered mother. She does everything for her kids. And she gets some great excitement out of making everyone happy. But everyone's happy as long as she's around. And so she goes around picking out her kids' clothes
And she's going around and solving all of her kids' problems. But she never teaches her kids how to solve the problems, or how to pick out their clothes, or how to cook their own food, or how to wash their dishes. She gets this great joy thinking that because she's around and she can do it all, that then her family's going to be happy. I don't know if Jezebel was like that. I don't know if she was a mother-centered mother. But I do remember that story when Ahab was sulking and upset because he just couldn't get the vineyard he wanted. And she came in and said, "I'll make it all right. I'll take care of it." I don't know if that's the way Abigail was. I know she had to take care of all the fires her foolish husband Nabal set. But I know that there are mothers like this. And I know that the temptation thinking that I've got to make sure everyone's happy, and so I've got to take care of everything and solve all the problems. Think about the young man that grows up in a household like that. And now he goes out to college. Well, he may not have to worry about eating if there's a cafeteria, but he has to do his laundry. He's got to deal with homework and adult things that have to be done. And what happened? Mom's not there to do it. So what happened? He doesn't know how to deal with it. He's got to find someone else to do the basic things of life because mom is not there. And that's what happens. We actually debilitate our children when we try to do everything for them, instead of trying to teach them as they grow up to take that responsibility. In God's family dynamic, mom is there to help. Dad is there to help. But they're not going to do it all for you, and neither should they. Part of our job is preparing our kids to be out on their own. And isn't it wonderful? Isn't it a better thought to have that security that you've seen your kids at a young age be able to make some good decisions? Especially when it comes to godly things, spiritual things. Rather than sitting home and worrying about what kind of decisions are they going to make? Can there be a father-centered family? Absolutely. It works the other way as well. But in most cases, most temptation is on the motherly side, to be the center of the family. But it's not something that leads to a healthy family dynamic. And then finally, what we would call the child-centered family. Let's go over to Genesis chapter 25. Genesis 25 and in verse 28. Now Isaac loved Esau because he had a taste for game, but Rebekah loved Jacob. And as you go over to chapter 27, we won't take the time to read this for sake of time, but we know the story. Jacob has already bought the birthright from Esau. It technically is his. But Esau still wants the blessing that comes with that birthright. And because Isaac loves him, favors him, he's going to give the birthright blessing to Esau. But here's Rebekah, and what does she do? What's the center for her? Her favorite is Jacob. And so in a very ugly, ugly story, here is a woman who loves her husband leading her son to lie and deceive his father so that he can have the birthright blessing. And isn't it interesting that just like what happened with Jacob losing Joseph
Here Rebecca loses Jacob, maybe for the rest of her life. The family is separated as Jacob has to flee for his life. And Esau wants to kill his brother. The child-centered family is where the marriage is not the primary relationship. In fact, in the child-centered family dynamic, what happens is the parents say, we've got to kind of put our marriage on hold. We just don't have time to deal with the marriage. And all of it goes to the children because we love the children. And so we're going to spend all of our time making them happy and healthy and raising them and doing all sorts of fun things with them. The child is grown in a way that he gets this message that he is the most important thing in the family dynamic. Now again, imagine a child that goes out in the world thinking that everything revolves around them. It's all about him. And now he goes out in the world and finds out that's not the way the world works. How's he going to function? Not very well. And not only that, how many of us have heard of these, what now is titled empty nest divorces? Couples that have been married for 20, 25, 30 years, and now they call it quits. They divorce one another. And we're like, you made it for 30 years. Why couldn't you make it for another 30? What's going on? Well, what it is, it's oftentimes this very thing. They put their marriage on hold for the children. The children were the center. They were the most important thing. And so the conflicts and developing the healthy marriage relationship, that wasn't done. And so if there was a problem, it was avoided. It was ignored. But it didn't go away. And so when the kids move out, we have these 25, 30 years, a mountain of problems. And there's some couples that look at that and they just say, forget it. I don't feel the same way I used to. We'll stick together for the children. But what happens when the children are gone? And so these are serious dynamics that often are found in today's families. You know, we hear so much today about, you know, the younger generation feeling like everything's owed to them, not having great work ethic, hard to work with them, right? And that's a stereotype. That doesn't mean all young people are like that. I would say there's a lot of young Christians out there that aren't anything like that. But there are enough of them that there is this stereotype. Should we be surprised when families think that they're smarter than God and fall to these types of things? No, this is exactly what we're seeing in the world as a result of the last 20, 30 years. Of this. This is the way they were raised. To avoid conflicts. Not to have any knowledge of how to do adult things. To think the world revolves around them. And so let us take to heart and encourage others and work in our family to be that happy, healthy, and successful family dynamic, just as we've talked about here. And as we close, let me ask you, when it comes to your relationship with God, there are some people that make God do everything. It's all about God, and if they need something, they go to God, and if they don't need anything, they just kind of live their life, and you know, if they need something, then God will be there. I don't think that's true of you, but by way of invitation, I want to ask that question, to be honest with yourself. You see, it's not all about God. There's two sides to salvation. There's a side of what we need to do. In Matthew 16, 24 and 25, then Jesus said to his disciples, "If anyone wishes to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever wishes to save his life shall lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake shall find it." What Jesus is saying is, one, you've got to do your part. If you're going to be a Christian, you've got to take up your cross, and that means there's going to be conflict, and there's going to be trouble, and there's going to be persecution, and you've got to deal with all of that. But the wonderful thing is we have a Father that helps us and teaches us and guides us and is there to pick us up when it's all over. Because he has the perfect family dynamic. Don't let God do everything. When it comes to salvation, you have a role to play. And if we can help you come forward and be baptized to confess your faith in Jesus Christ, it will be a glorious Father's Day as we'll rejoice with you. If you need to take on your role in salvation this morning, won't you let that be known as together we stand and as we sing.